W4FHJ, W4DJW. Hey, Gene.
Hey, David, I was calling you on the landline, but I didn't know your phone number, but I figured I'd get you this way. And also, getting in touch with you, I thought about going and parking at Starbucks at the drive-thru line, and I'd see you sooner or later. That's an old joke. You remember about that. Anyway, I got you. Now, what I wanted to ask you, if you'd be available to do it one of these days, could you stop over at my house and maybe give me some recommendations on an HF antenna? I got a brand new HF antenna vertical here, but it's not worth a hootenanny when it comes to, I mean, because of all the noise on the 75-meter band. And I figured I'd get something like an MCOM, if you know what that is, or some other kind. I got trees all around me, and that's the big problem. And you might have an idea or two on that, David. I don't know whether you'd be able to do that or not, but anyway, make me a comment about it, over.
I'll have all kind of time to do that come the 15th of next month, a month from 5 days from now. Yeah, because I'll have free time galore. So, yeah, Gene, if it can wait that long, or if not, when we can get together on a weekend, then we can do that too.
Be great, most any time, Saturday or Sunday or whatever.
Well, just listen for me on the radio, and we'll make plans next time we're both available on the weekend. If not, we'll do it for sure a month from now.
Roger that. While we're talking, would you jot down my cell phone number, 864-303-4438, over.
Do that one more time. I was bringing up notepad.
64-303-4438.
I have 864-303-4438. Roger. I'll give you a call when I've got some free time, and we'll just take it from there.
Much obliged, David, to you. I appreciate it, Dave. Good to talk with you. So, back to Walt. Take it, net control. It's W4FHJ out.
Figured Dave would come back and hang around a little bit. Appreciate glad you got in contact with him. All right. Before I close the net out and file my net report, have I missed anyone for comments or check-ins? Hold on just a second. I will file my net report. Be back in a minute. Appreciate everyone taking their time to check in tonight, and the ones that stuck around for Riot Shoe. Tomorrow night, Garrett K4DOS will be running the net. And remember, he'll have the swap net there. And I'm sure Garrett appreciates you checking in with him tomorrow night. This is K4OIM now securing the 2-meter net with our thanks for all that checked in. I'll now turn the repeater back to normal amateur use. 7-3s and good night to all, and God bless. I'm here, this is K4OIM. Who's in here for the round table tonight?
K4OIM, KO4NUE. Well, I've got three questions tonight, and I don't. They may be stupid to some people, but I'm gonna go ahead and just put it out there and ask my questions. So the first question is net control questions. When the net report goes, when you send a net report out, and I hear that computer generated voice, what does QTC mean? And QNI, if I wrote those down right, I'm assuming that QNI is how many participants were in the net, but QTC
written. QNI is the number of check-ins. QTC is the number of pieces of traffic that you have. The Q signals are actually for CW. I don't know why we use them on phone, but we do. QTH, a whole bunch of them like that. But the Q signals were actually set up for CW operators. But the phone people got lazy. Instead of talking, they just spit out a bunch of letters. Chad, I've got a list of the Q signals here someplace. I'll have to dig them out. But I can scan them into the computer and send them over to you, so give you some idea of what they all mean. Piece of formal traffic, or somebody makes an announcement and puts a number on it so you can count it as a piece of traffic. Walt's net report tonight was one piece of traffic. If I had made an announcement and put a number on it, then it would have been the number of pieces of traffic would have been two. It depends on how many pieces of traffic you get, how many announcements, and how many people put numbers on them, so you can count it as traffic. But I don't know if you listen to the South Carolina single sideband net or not, but they pass a lot of traffic on there. Matter of fact, I took a couple of pieces of traffic for them and off of there and sent it to other people, and I enjoy that. That's a lot of fun, too. But that's what it is.
I'm hearing you on single sideband. I've been studying with Roger and George, and they've been teaching me how to send traffic properly. And I sent my first piece of traffic not before last on single sideband. And that's very interesting. I enjoy doing that, and I guess just the whole formality of the whole thing. But I have heard you on there a couple of times sending and receiving traffic, and I think that's really neat. So my second question is, once the net is closed and the report is generated, that goes to the net manager. Once the net manager gets his hands on it, what does he do, and where does it go from there?
W4DJW, if you want me to handle that one, Walt, I will.
Go ahead, Dave. That's why I invited some people that know more than I do to be sure and try to stick around.
So there's a section manager as well, and then there's a net manager overall. That's an ARRL thing. So it used to be that Rusty, WU2T, was our section manager, but he's no longer our section manager. So now I go straight to the net manager for all of the different sections, and he'll get another section manager for our section that we're in. But usually it goes from me to the section manager, and there's multiple net managers that send it to the section manager. The section manager compiles that report and sends that to the ultimate net manager at the ARRL headquarters, and then they publish it to everybody. So you can go look up all the different nets that happen throughout the country, and you can see how many stations check into them, how much traffic they pass. You can get all that information off the ARRL, and it's just a compiled list. It's usually a month behind, because it takes a lot of people some time to get their reports in. I try to get our report in the night of the last day of the month. Sometimes I'm the first day of the next day of the month, but usually they've got about a month lag between the time that all the reports get in. They compile all the reports, and then they publish the results so that everybody can see them across the nation. W4DJW, back to Net Control.
Some questions answered, Chad. And the next time you come over here, I got a book here published by the ARRL that really helped me when I first got on the air. And, boy, that's back in 78. But back 3 years ago when I upgraded novice to technician, I ordered a new one. It's published by the ARRL. It's the Amateur's Operating Manual, and it will help you out a lot on antennas, and it's got all the operating procedures in there. It's got all the cue signals in there, and the way you're going at this hobby, you are going to learn Morse code. And there's a whole section in there on that. And believe me, I think everybody that gets into the hobby eventually wants to learn Morse code. And my speed's been lagging a little bit, and I've been reading a lot on Morse code. And they say the way to learn it is at 15 words a minute, and it's a free course on the internet. And boy, it is helping me out a lot as far as getting my speed up. I've got three paddles here, four or five straight keys, but I've got this Ken Pro 2 straight key that I bought from the widow of a Sour Key up there above Fletcher about 2 months ago. And man, I love this key. I'd a whole lot rather use a straight key than the paddle, but some people prefer the paddle. But you said you had another question. KO4 NUE. K4 OIM.
The next question is, and I think I know the answer to this, but I just want to make sure. So if I run an amplifier, 1,000 watts, I am assuming that RG8X is not going to handle that. Is that a correct assumption?
Correct. Isn't it Gary or Dave?
You can run 1,500 watts through RG8. That's not the mini stuff. That's not the mini 8. That's the, it's about a half inch in diameter and stuff. Yeah, you can run 1,500 watts through that into your antenna. KI4 DOS.
Gary, can I do that at 156 feet?
People do.
They're talking about RG58, 58X.
Well, I'm not running RG58. It's RG8X.
Oh, that's what that's designed for.
Thank you. Hey, Larry. Chad, I've run from my house down to my HF antenna as 100 feet, and then I've got to come up into the shack and under the house and all of this. I'm talking from the outside of the house to the where the antenna goes up. I've got about 30 feet outside going straight up, and then I've got about another 25 or 30 feet inside the house here once it comes under the edge of the house and then comes back to the radio shack. So I got about 160 feet of coax RG8 on mine, and it works without too much problem.
Okay, I'm gonna move my tower up. I got a fab shop down here and a machine shop, and built me a tower. I got it up to about 60 feet and made it so I can move it around with a bobcat. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but I want to put it in different places so it doesn't look so bad, and I just haven't found the right spot. But I'll just, I've got my antenna on a pulley so I can drop the antenna down to the ground and then just hook the tower up to the bobcat and take it and set it wherever I want. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but I'm just kind of experimenting and don't want to lock anything down right now until I get, you know, exactly where I want things. And sometimes I just have to look at things to see how it looks out. I see how it works out, you know. And I don't want my wife fussing at me too much because she can see a tower in the backyard. That's the other reason, too.
These questions for yourself or for Anna?
You're distant, but I do have one more question for Gary, but it's not a ham-related question.
Ask him. Still here?
Well, for this one, I'm going to ask it anyway. So, all the years that you've been married, let's say you got a $20 bill. You put a $20 bill in your pants pocket, and you forget about that $20 bill, and it shows up in the washing machine. Does Miss Joy get that $20 bill, or do you get it back?
You don't know it by now. What yours is hers, and what's hers is hers too. we don't have a mine and yours. It all goes in one pot. And if I leave a $20 bill in my pocket and it comes through the washing machine and whatnot, she grabs it, it probably goes in her pocketbook or her purse. I carry a pocketbook because it folds up like a book and I put it in my pocket. But it doesn't make any difference to us one way or the other. If I've got money, she's got money. If she's got money, I've got money. And but just remember, what yours belongs to her and what hers belongs to her. You know, what's hers is hers and what's yours is hers too. And if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
Hey, that lesson. She found almost $100 in the washing machine. And believe me, before I take my dirty laundry in there now, I go through my pants pockets. That other station is on the check-in. Go ahead.
This is KK4JBQ. First of all, I have to say, listen to the man who's who knows what he's talking about. And thank you for that, Gary. I will try my best to remember it. I just want to point out in the questions and answers that have been going this way and that there's a couple of things to note. In his answer, Gary always said RG8. RG8 has a stiff nylon dielectric that surrounds the center conductor. RG8X has foam dielectric. The RG8X will handle more power, and you can make tighter bends with that. If you make a tight bend with RG8X, there's a chance that center conductor will migrate to the shield, and you'll get a short. No tight bends with RG8X, but you can do whatever you like with RG8. And the second thing is that as far as Q codes go, there is an app for your phone called Ham I Am, HamIAM. And it has a list of Q codes which you can carry around in your pocket if that's where you keep your phone. very convenient. I refer to mine quite often. There's a lot of other stuff there, too, concerning this hobby, answering a lot of questions. And, you know, carry around references. That's always a good thing to have. That's why what I add now. And thank you all for having this roundtable discussion. Appreciate it much. KK4JBQ. Back to Ned.
KBQ, KK4NUE, thanks for clearing that up for me. And, that's about all I got tonight, if anybody else is in there. But I got a list of questions I keep beside the radio and wait for Tuesday night. So I appreciate some of you wiser fellas hanging around and trying to help me out, because like I said, I don't really have an Elmer I can go to. I just try to do the best I can, and so far so good, but it's nice to have some help, you know, just from experience that I can ask. So I appreciate that more than y'all know. But it's KK4NUE, and that's all I got, Walt. Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Larry.
KK4OIM. Hey, Chad, if you'll paint that tower pink, you'll be able to put it about anywhere you want to.
That's the way this is going to work, since she's got my $20 bill. When she keeps my money out of my pocket, out of the washing machine, that tower gets 50 feet closer to the house. So if I lose a dollar, then it moves 1 foot closer to the house. But see, this week I lost $20, so I just hooked Bobcat to it, and it gets 20 feet closer to the house. When I get my $20 back, then I'll move it 20 feet back out the field. And so far, it's not really working. she don't seem to be fazed too much by it. But maybe if I did paint it pink, maybe I could get some kind of reaction.
Same shack, maybe you need to paint your shack paint too.
Today, I was going to tell you, yesterday, our daughter's going to Clemson, so both the boys and her are gone, so we're empty nesting, and I've taken the bed rings and turning it into a ham shack. And well, yesterday I pulled a game box out of the wall. It had a light switch on it, and when the house was built, they used them game boxes that you drive two nails. You just attach the game box to the 2x4 and drive it in. Well, I just snatched it out and cut the wire and threw the game box on the floor with all the other, you know, construction mess. And I didn't think nothing about it. Stepped up on the step stool and was doing something. I stepped back off the step stool, and that game box was sticking up there, and them nails were sticking out of that saw gun. And it went through my shoe and right in the heel of my foot. I don't know, probably a good half inch up in my foot. I like never got that saw gun out. And so are you going to talk about sore my foot? It's so sore today. I can't hardly walk on it, but it just, you know, it just hurts.
As a kid, Daddy always had a big garden, and he had a doggone pitchfork. I don't know why in the world he had that pitchfork. Yeah, I do, for digging up the potatoes. But we'd get out there in the yard running, playing tag and all. And before I was 8 years old, I stepped on that same pitchfork twice. One time it went slam through my foot. That time Daddy built a fire and put that pitchfork in there, got it glowing red hot. He took a piece of half-inch galvanized pipe and put over the teeth about halfway down, and bent them back and made a rake out of it. Well, he burnt the
handle off of the thing. So he took that piece of galvanized pipe and drilled a hole through it and bolted that galvanized pipe to that rake. And I'll be a son of a gun if I didn't go running around the house and that rake was laying out there with the teeth up. I stepped on it and that handle come up, hit me, and knocked me out. Man, I was glad when I got 18 and went in the Navy and got away from that doggone pitchfork.
That's a good one, Wal. Well, I joined when I was 17, and when I got the basic training, I was a drill sergeant from Darlington, South Carolina, and he asked me, he said, why did you join the military? And I said, well, Daddy put lights on the tractor. And when he put those lights on the tractor, I just said, I'm not gonna work through the night now. I got to do something different. So I just went on down and joined the Army and did my tour.
KK4JBQ. I am really enjoying this. Thank you all. Thank you again. I just want to drop this in there because it's in my head. If you didn't go right to the doctor or the emergency room, get yourself a tetanus shot. You really should have, and you should do it just as quick as you can. That's nothing to mess around with. I grew up with a fellow who, oh, we were both boys, and messing around near some construction debris, which is what you were in the middle of, construction debris, and the nail went right through his foot about midway and sticking out the top of his boot. It was a big old long nail. And we rushed him to the emergency room, and they were proud to see him shortly after he did that because you need a tetanus shot. That's nothing to fool with. And, well, anyway, just wanted to add that. KK4JBQ.
Larry, I didn't think about that. We got a doctor in the family, so I'll go talk with her and see what I can do about getting that straightened out. But I appreciate the advice, and I have enjoyed it too, Gary and Larry. Well, Lord, I appreciate you doing this and giving me the opportunity to learn and, you know, get with some of the older guys with more wisdom. And I appreciate it. And I'm going to have to step on out. It's time for me to go to bed. But, well, Gary, Larry, thank you so much. It's KO4NUE, and I'll be clear.
KI4DOS. But
I tell you, before you leave, I'll send you a picture of my tower. It's right up next to the house. And once you get it up and the antennas and everything are up there on it, and nobody's climbing it and playing around on it, your sweet bride won't even see it. Mine doesn't see it. She doesn't say anything about it, where it is or anything else. So it makes her happy, though. That's the main thing. Have a good evening. Get you some rest. I hope you don't have to work too hard tomorrow. And I'll talk to you a little bit later. 73, KI4DOS.
KUEK4OIM. Before you leave, Dad, you talking about your dad putting the lights on the tractor. I'll tell you how stupid and country I was. I joined the Navy in Greenville, and they put me on the 180-day delay program. That means I joined, but it'd be 180 days before I could go get sworn in, get my physical and all of that, and go to boot camp. Well, I caught a bus from Greenville back to Greer, got off the bus, and had to walk about 2 miles home. And when I got home, there was a Navy recruiter sitting in the yard. And he said, Walt, we got a group going down to Columbia
of tomorrow to get their physical, get sworn in. If you want to go, we can get that over with. Just be over here at the recruiting office over at the federal building in Greenville tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. Next morning, I was over there with new clothes on and all dressed up, ready to go. They put us on a bus, drove us to Columbia, got down there, got the physical, got sworn in. And it was all the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and Marine. Once you got sworn in, they separated the groups, and they were about 12 of us going in the Navy. They put us in a little van and took us out there to the airport. I said, man, I'm going to get on the airplane the first time I have been on the airplane. They put us on the airplane. I thought they was flying us back to Greenville, Spartanburg. Next thing I knew, I was in Dallas, Texas, getting refueled. What the heck? Well, we got refueled and took off, and I think it was going across the Rockies, and the stewardess come by. They were going to serve the meals, and I didn't know nothing about them menus. They didn't have no hot dogs and hamburgers. But the guy sitting next to me, he got a... Golly, I can't think of what he called it. Something to do with shrimp. I said, I'll have the same thing he's got. Well, he's having a martini. I said, I'll have one of them. I didn't know what a martini was. I ate that stuff, and my ears got stopped up, and I'm sitting there chomping at the bits, and the stewardess come by and says, try this, and she gave me some chewing gum. I didn't know what to do with it. I chewed that chewing gum up good and soft and split it in half, and I thought I was supposed to put it in my ears. I put it in my ears like earplugs. We got to San Diego. It was up in the night. They rushed us off that bus into the barracks to sleep for about 2 hours. And then they come in there beating on the trash cans, and you run out there and get on your billet number and meet your drill instructor. And he walked by me, and I had chewing gum all in my hair everywhere. And what the hell happened to you? That's the truth, Chad. That happened, but that chewing gum didn't stay there about 2 hours. I didn't have no hair.
Good one. Well, I spent some time on some aircraft on the last deployment, and we were flying to Balad from Talil in Iraq, and getting on a C-130 is not a, you just don't just get on one of those things, you know, you gotta stay in a holding cell and wait there, hurry up and wait, like Gary said, and I'd been waiting for an hour or two with a whole bunch of other people, and just was anticipating the flight, and hot, Lord mercy, it's so hot, and you got all your battle gear on, you're hot and aggravated. So we get on the aircraft and get ready to taxi down the runway, and all of a sudden the pilot kills the power, and the crew chief, I guess he's a crew chief. He was in charge of what's going on in the back of the plane. He starts hollering, get off the plane, get off the plane, get off the plane. So they lowered the ramp, and we all bailed out, you know, got weapons and grenades and pistols, and we know what was going on. And the crew came out too. The pilot shut the plane completely down. And the crew chief, going down the runway, saw a rat on the back of the, right across the storage area where they had all the troops. And they shut that airplane down until they found that rat. They pulled every deck board up on the back of that thing trying to find that stupid rat. And we sat out there on that hard tarmac for, I don't know, probably 3 hours. And I just thought that was the craziest thing, but after I got to thinking about it, you know, I guess if that rat chews on the wrong wire up at about 30,000 feet, you're in trouble. So I guess the pilot made the right call.
Give us some of this. We had some crazy stuff go on in the military when I was going through firefighting school. Firefighting school. They put you in that concrete building with a trough running down three sides of it with diesel fuel in it. And you had two men outside on the fire hose, and they would light that diesel fuel, and it'd get so hot in there and smoky, and you had to stay in there till those two guys on the hose come in there and put it out. And if somebody started screaming or hollering, they'd get you out of there. And we thought that was it. And then they'd holler reflash. They'd light that thing up and everybody go back in there. And I had this one guy right next to me. He'd start screaming and crying like a baby. And we went through that about 3 or 4 times. And the company commander said, I tell you what, if I had somebody like that causing me to have to go through this, I believe I'd quieten him down. So they hollered reflash. We go back in there. His kids started screaming, and the guy on his other side had the same idea I did. I hauled off and cold cocked him, but that guy did too. He didn't scream and holler. We got out of the building, and they didn't holler reflash no more.
You get in situations, people do strange things, I guess, and you gotta be able to depend on them. So sometimes you gotta snap them into, you know, the right phase, I guess. But when I was stationed at Talil on the second deployment in Iraq, and spent a lot of time on Blackhawks, Chinooks, Sherpas, C-130s, did fly on C-4 Galaxy with a whole bunch of cargo that was pretty interesting. But I had one specific Blackhawk that I liked to fly on because the door gunner was a female. And when you get in country, they give you these little special shirts you wear under your body armor that helps get that sweat away from your body. And you could put your nickname on that sausage shirt. You couldn't wear it on uniform, but you could that undershirt, you know. And she was the left-hand door gunner on that Blackhawk. And she went to the carpenter shop there on camp, and they cut back of her helmet out so her ponytail could hang out the back of that flight helmet. And her nickname was Cupcake. And I always flew on that bird because she didn't hesitate. If she saw something she didn't like, she would light it up. But most of the guys were, you know, pretty reserved, but she didn't care. She just, you know, she'd take any chances. So I always liked to fly on that bird with her because she, you know, she didn't hesitate at all. She wasn't too friendly, but I didn't care too much about her being friendly. I just wanted somebody to run that machine gun when we were flying, you know. But it's just a whole interesting experiment. I mean, experience. The first deployment, flew into Camp Wolf, I believe it was. They said we'd be there for 4 months. And 18 months later, I came home. Came home for three and a half years, trained up, and then.
Yeah, your radio timed out, didn't it?
But second deployment, I was gone for 12 months, and just an interesting, a really interesting experience, you know. So let me let this thing cycle. Well, hang on.
It's reflecting signals from other stations, something like Skip or Moon Bounce. The from other stations are hitting the particles in the smoke from the wood that's got metallic particles in it. It's reflecting other signals back down on other frequencies other than what they were broadcasting on.
Able to understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, they're not overriding you at all, Chad.
Audio in the bedroom, so I keep a handy talkie in here, and I crossband repeat off of that Kenwood up to the repeater. But one other interesting story, Walt, was one day I was going out of the perimeter, and it's going to go into Tallil. They had a market there that you could go buy things, you know, coffee and spices and things like that, you know. But you had to, you can't just leave a perimeter. You got to line up until so many vehicles and so much of a combat force accumulates. When you get, you know, five or six machine guns and, you know, you get enough comms and fuel and water, usually around 20, 30 vehicles, they'd let you leave. And you stay in that convoy the whole time. And so anyway, we're going into town and was waiting there at the gate, just there 2 or 3 hours sometimes, waiting on enough people to accumulate. Four females. They had their burqas on, and I'm assuming one was a grandmother and one was the daughter, and then two grandkids. And the grandmother was out there pointing at the dirt outside of the fence, and she raked about a 2 foot depression out in the sand, and I don't know, 6-8 inches deep, and had those grandkids pour probably 2 or 3 liters of water inside that depression. And in Iraq, there's not a lot of humidity in the air, and it's just so hot that moisture it dissipates pretty quickly. So, they sit there 30, 40 minutes, I guess. Water evaporated out of that hole, it pulled salt out of that earth, and that salt accumulated in a kind of like dust or crystals on top of that mud or dirt or sand. And they raked that salt off the top of that dirt and put it in their little bag. And It wasn't much. It's probably, I don't know, 2 or 3 tablespoons, I guess. But I got thinking about that, and, you know, we go to the grocery store and pay 59 cents for a quart of salt. It's got Morton salt on the front of it, and we don't think nothing about it. But that, I don't think I'll ever forget, you know. They did what they had to do, and that grandmother out there teaching their kids how to get salt out of the earth. Now, that was something I'd never seen before and thought was just really interesting.
Interesting stuff about earth batteries. Back in the 1800s, when they had the telegraphs, they didn't have dry cell batteries or acid field batteries. They had earth batteries where they drove copper rods and all up in the ground and got the electricity for the telegraph out of the ground. But getting back to Afghanistan and all, that was totally different in Vietnam. I don't know which would be worse. The sand and dust of Afghanistan or the jungle with the swamps and monsoon season of Vietnam. I was an automatic rifleman in my company. I carried the M60 and, you know, I had one guy carrying the tripod and all the ammo he could carry, and then I had another guy carrying the barrels and all the ammo he could carry, and I had the M60 and all the ammo I could carry. But, man, I'd say 90% of the time you were soaking wet, Chad. I don't know which was worse. Afghanistan was declared a war, but Vietnam, as far as I know, it was just a conflict that we chickened out of.
It was Vietnam. I mean, I wasn't there. Let me back that up a little bit. But none of it is fun, and none of it is enjoyable. No war is. But the main difference was that when the Vietnam veterans came home, they didn't get the recognition they deserved. And that had to be horrible. I mean, that had to be horrible. I could not imagine having to deal with that coming home. And because when we came home, it was a different story, you know. We were cared for and treated respectfully, and I don't know what I'd done if that had been the other way or the way Vietnam veterans were treated. And the other thing too is the Vietnam veterans basically set up the VA for treatment, and hang on a minute, Walt.
Cambodia, and we flew into L.A. International, and they told us before we landed that we might need to change into our civilian clothes because they were protesters. They were throwing rotten eggs, tomatoes at us. It didn't matter if you was in your civilian clothes. They could tell by the haircut, Chad.
And, you know, a few minutes ago, you was talking about having to walk back to the house about 2 miles. Well, I came back from the first deployment. I snuck in to surprise my family. And I had a fella drop me off up at Boomer Edward Williams store, you know, up there where the briar patch is. And I purposely walked back to the house. And I'm going to tell you right now, I enjoyed every single step of it. Because I just miss home so bad. And when I got to the driveway, we've got a real long driveway coming out here to the farm. And just walking down that driveway and just smelling home and being where I grew up, man, they were just nothing like that in the world and better in the world. The fire department, you know, if you, Holly Springs Fire Department, if you, you know, came back from the war, they put your name up on the billboard there. And, you know, so if there's any Vietnam veterans out there listening tonight, I just want to say, hey, I appreciate your service. And I appreciate everything y'all had to go through, because it was not anything like what we experienced in my generation. And, you know, I just want to let you know, hey, I know that, I respect that, and I definitely appreciate it. And that's KL4NUE for station ID.
UE, K4OIM. I didn't realize you growed up around this area. Yeah, I remember Bloomer Williams up there before the Briar Patch was there. And I seen on the news the other night, they had a special on there about Bloomer Williams' store. And they said it was going to cost over $1 million to clean that side up where that old store's falling in. I was hoping somebody would buy that and restore it.
Hotel, but send some moisture out. Hey.
Rusted through and that gasoline has a component in it called NMTB, and it's some kind of environmental disaster, you know. So 30, 40 years of fuel being pumped in that thing, and it slowly leaked out over the ground. If you walk back behind the store there where the pecan trees are, there's observation wells back there where DHEC has put wells in the ground so they could monitor how deeply that chemical is in the ground. So it's not that needs to be cleaned up. It's a small environmental disaster is what it is. And but yeah, I live exactly 1 mile from Bloomer's store, and I used to ride up there on my bicycle and pick up Coca-Cola bottles on the side of the road and take them down there to Bloomer's and cash them in. I think you get 10 cents a piece for them. And I've candy or this, that, and the other day. And on the days I go up there, sometimes you give me a watermelon or, you know, sit around and shoot the breeze with it. But he kept 22 bullets there behind the counter. And sometimes I trade my Coke bottles in for some 22 shorts so I could go frog gigging. And, you know, back then, they, you know, wasn't no problem with things like that. But, what I got was I traded a whole bunch of Coke bottles in. Bloomer had some tobacco up on the back wall there that was, I think it was African Twist, or maybe it was Black Mariah. I forget which one it was. But it was in a twist, and he just kept hanging on nails back there. So I decided I wasn't going to get no candy that day. I was going to give me some chewing tobacco. So I got me a big old twist of that, of whatever it was, and I got back on that bicycle. I bit me off a big plug of that, and well, I tell you, I believe that's the sickest I've ever been. By the time I got back to the house, I was so sick, and my mouth was numb. I mean, I don't know what kind of chewing tobacco that was, but it was awful.